things first, make sure you grab yourself a pen and paper, because we're going to jump right into the conversation here in a moment. The topics we're going to talk about on this interview are going to directly impact your bottom line. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Russell Westcott, Vice President of the Real Estate Investment Network, and you are tuned into the Real Estate Investing in Canada interview series. Today, you'll hear from a Canadian best-selling author and one of Canada's top residential mortgage brokers, Mr. Peter Kinch. Tell you what, if you've been paying attention to the Canadian mortgage market, you definitely know that the Canadian government is once again tinkering with the mortgage rules. But what does this all mean to homeowners and real estate investors across the country? Peter and I will dive headfirst into the changes and the updates in the market and provide you with solutions how you can navigate through many of these changes. Plus, make sure you stay tuned to the end of this interview where Peter's going to give his bold prediction on the future of interest rates. That, in and of itself, is worth your time on this conference call. Tell you what, now more than ever, it's important that you have a professional mortgage broker on your team, and that's why we are bringing you the best of the best for today's interview. So let's jump right in. Tell you what, there's lots of changes in the mortgage market happening, and hopefully Peter can provide us with some clarity. Mr. Peter Kinch, how are you doing today? Welcome to the call.
Hey, Russell. As always, it's a pleasure to be on the call with you. And hey, you know what? I thought I'd start off with some good news for beer drinkers out there today.
Well, that's part of the agenda.
There's a relevant topic. You know, just to kind of get, I was just flipping through the Globe and Mail, and one of the big topics in today's paper is March 8th here today, and it says beer drinkers get a 2011 reprieve from the cost of barley. So
well,
barley is not going up in 2011. So there you go.
And for people like us who have wheat and barley allergies.
Well, I figured that some people on the call might find that an upbeat way to start the day.
Well, exactly. Especially we're doing this early in the day too, aren't we?
There you go. Irish listeners.
Yeah. First, good thing you mentioned the date, because that was the first thing I was going to preface this. Because tell you what, when we're talking interest rates and we're talking mortgage markets, it's always good to put a date on things, because we're doing this recording in early March, 2011. But you know what the really funny thing was, Peter? When I was preparing for this interview, I listened to the last one that we did, and we did it, it would have been April of last year. I had a deja vu feeling and a little bit of nostalgia, because a lot of the things that were happening last year aren't the same things that are happening this year.
Yeah, it's kind of like Back to the Future. What comes around goes around, and it, interestingly enough, we live in interesting times, and what we have here is a marketplace that's obviously changing. But the big thing, Russell, is a lot of hype and misinformation out there, and we've had this ongoing for over a year now, and it's all result of the post-recession climate. That is new territory for everyone, because, I mean, we were just humming along from 2004 to 2008. Everything was going fine, everything went up in a straight line, felt like it was going to keep going forever, and then all of a sudden, boom, we get this great, you know, subprime crisis followed by a global recession and a global credit crunch, and now everybody's in uncharted territories, including the economists, including the experts, and what you're seeing in the media is a lot of hyperbole and a lot of guesswork about, well, I think this is going to happen, I think that's going to happen. And interestingly enough, the market seemed to defy what the predictions are, and so here we are, 2011, almost repeating the same patterns of fear and hype that we saw at the beginning of 2010.
So let's maybe just take a quick step back. I know you gave us a good little overview there. So what did happen in 2010? And we can keep that fairly short, because sometimes you have to look into what happened last year to determine what's happening this year. We'll take a look at what happened last year briefly, and then let's talk about the first few months of 2011.
Well, you know, again, if you look at January 2010, it mirrored 2011 in the fact that Jim Flaherty and the government of Canada combined with the Bank of Canada to come up with new rules and restricting the practices of CMHC. Remember, when the government of Canada makes rule changes, the only entity that they can impact is CMHC, the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation, which controls high-ratio financing. And if you're listening to this as a real estate investor, the one major rule that they came up with it and changed was that people buying real estate for investment purposes, in other words, it's not a principal residence, must put 20% down. In other words, the government no longer felt comfortable insuring high-ratio financing. And they eliminated the 40-year amortization and bumped it back to 35 years. So they had a couple of rules that came out last January, and this was all predicated on the fact that they were worried about, A, a potential housing bubble, B, they were worried about Canadians getting into overburdened with low-interest debt, and then in the event that interest rates were to jump up significantly, then a lot of Canadians wouldn't be able to handle those low interest rates they had. So they wanted to discourage people from borrowing too much, having long amortizations, and they wanted to get away or discourage people from speculating on real estate, which they felt was part of the problem of driving residential housing prices up. So all this culminated in the fact that for a real estate investor, you now had to put 20% down.
Which for most real estate investors, there's been no change there, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you've been suggesting that. I've been suggesting. I mean, it's funny. When I wrote my book, Canadian Real Estate Action Plan, I had it ready to go to print the week that Jim Flaherty announced his rules. I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to change a dozen chapters in the book. And I went back and I only had to change 4 pages. Because, we've been teaching people to buy for cash flow purposes, since day one. And the reality is, when you put zero down or 5% down or 10% down, it's very difficult to get a positive cash flowing property. So, you could go on and on about how you come up with a 20% down on a separate phone call about joint venture partners. But the fact of the matter is, if you put 20% down, you have a much stronger portfolio. Banks are going to like your portfolio more because you're not overly leveraged, and that you've increased your percentage chances of creating a cash flow producing property. But getting back to the Bank of Canada and the government and the events of 2010, we run into what Don always calls the unintended consequences of that. What happened was you had another event in British Columbia and Ontario that kicked in July of 2010, and that was the HST. So you take the fact that mortgage rules are changing, interest rates are perceived to be going up, I emphasize perceived, and there's going to be HST in July, and what you had is an absolute ridiculous rush on the market in spring. Because they thought, well, get in before the rules change, get in before interest rates go up, and get in before the HST. And it was almost this get in while you can mentality. And May of 2010 was the busy one, if not the most, and you might remember this, Russ, I can't remember if it's the most or close to the most active real estate market on record was May of 2010.
Wow. Yeah, and I tell you what, it's all created from changes that happen, and a lot of people are uninformed of how the changes impact them or what they can do with it.
Well, and really, it was created from fear and hype.
Yep.
Of perceptions, and then of course, go figure. What do you think the August market was? What the media was reporting in August? Oh, real estate market is down. Well, no kidding, because everybody was rushing to get in before the HST kicked in July. So there was, the great thing, if you're listening to this, is so much of this is predictable. And if you look at it, you just take a step back and look what the mass hordes are doing and how everybody's reacting to media hype. The biggest thing I try to do, Russ, and I know you guys do it, is educate people on how to interpret signals from the media that's going to trigger mass reaction and how you can profit from it.
Yep.
And it was just so predictable that we'd have a spike in prices in May, followed by a crash in July and August. And then the interesting thing is, you look at the Canadian dollar and other factors, the Bank of Canada still had very little ability to continue to raise rates the way they wanted. They did raise rates in July last year. They went from the absolute historic rock bottom low, and they increased it to 1% so that, or by 1%, so that prime was now at 3%. And we're still sitting here a year later with prime at 3%. And, you know, January of 2011 kicks around, and it's almost a mere copy of last year. Rates are historically low. There's pressure to increase rates. They're worried about the spending patterns of Canadians. Canadians are taking on too much debt. I mean, you could almost push a recording from January 2010 and January 2011, and they'd be almost identical.
Well, Pete, you gave away our secret here. We're actually Memorex. This is a recording from last year.
There you go. That's why I threw in the whole thing with the beer and the barley prices, just so right. People knew we were.
So actually, it's kind of interesting. You mentioned the perceived perception of interest rates going up, and Bank of Canada definitely raised the prime interest rate over the last year since we last talked. However, the one thing that isn't talked about is banks are now offering discount off prime, where a little over a year ago, you were paying prime plus a half up to prime plus 1%. Now you're getting prime minus 3/4 on some products.
Oh, so absolutely.
In essence, has the rate gone up?
No, it's actually gone down. Ironically, when it went up, it went down. If you were paying, let's say prime was 2%, and your mortgage was prime plus 1, well, then your interest rate would be 3%. Now, prime goes up from 2% to 3%, but the discount on your mortgage goes from prime plus 1 to prime minus 3/4.
Mm-hmm.
Well, prime minus 3/4 at a prime of 3% is 2.25. So hard to follow the math there if you're just kind of if you don't have that pen and paper in front of you that Russ suggested earlier, but you know the reality is the actual cost of getting a mortgage today is less than it was a year ago.
Yeah.
For anybody on a variable rate mortgage, plus Russ, in that whole time frame, the bond yields decreased, they dropped, so the price of long-term financing went back to historic lows. So throughout the course of the past year, we've again went right back to record low interest rates.
Yep. At the end of the day, and we will talk and address this, is interest rates cannot stay at this level forever. And we will talk about the reasons why and the signals of when interest rates should start going up. But, here's the other thing. I wanted to offer a tip to everybody right now that's out there. This may be worth your time just listening to this call. If you have any prime plus interest products, if you're in a variable rate and you have a prime plus 1 or prime plus a half or something, right now you should go back to your bank and look at renegotiating the rate of getting a prime minus and pay the penalty, because the penalty that you may have to pay is inconsequential to getting that new interest rate right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So March 18th is rolling around this year. 2011, we've had a little bit of, peat, pardon the pun, and repeat in 2011. And now March 18th is coming up very shortly, or if you're listening to this after that, March 18th is now passed. The new rule changes are coming in. What did they do to this wave of changes if someone's listening to the call and is not familiar with what happened? Maybe we can give them a quick snapshot of what's coming down the pipe.
Well, first of all, I think Jim Flaherty does a very adept job of stick-handling around pressure. He gets pressure from people to make changes to prevent American-style reckless borrowing so that they can, there's pressure on Jim Flaherty from the finance minister to protect Canadians from themselves, so that we do not go down the path of our American counterparts. But in the process, what's interesting is he strategically, almost surgically, targets the fringe. he'll look and say, okay, well, what's the most dangerous fringe players we got here? Well, okay, let's say people who are borrowing and taking 35-year amortizations. Well, let's cut that back to 30 years. What about people who are going and refinancing their entire home equity and using it just to survive on lifestyle or pay the bills? Well, that's a dangerous, slippery slope. So let's prevent Canadians from refinancing their home up to 90% and cut it back to 85%. And, we don't want the government to be responsible for insuring or CMHC providing high-ratio insurance for people taking out home equity lines of credit. So they eliminated high-ratio home equity lines of credit. Now, those are the three factors, the amortization, the refinance, and the home equity line of credit. Those are the three new rule changes. And honestly, let's face it. If you're a real estate investor, it has absolutely zero impact, but it has a completely negligible impact on you. The only area that a real estate investor will have been affected is two areas. Number one, it was nice as a real estate investor to have access to 35-year amortizations because it just lowers your monthly cost by, a couple hundred dollars and increases the opportunity to have cash flow. But going from a 35-year amortization to a 30-year amortization is not the end of the world, and all it does is increase more of your money going towards the principal. So it's not like I have so many people, Russ, saying, oh my God, it's going to be more expensive to get a mortgage. No, it's not. Changing my 35-year amortization to 30 does not make it more expensive. It just means that more of your money has to go to the principal, and that's what the government is trying to do. They're trying to encourage Canadians to retire with equity, and that's really the target of Flaherty's actions. If I could summarize it, Jim Flaherty did not want to have a scenario where the headlines were saying, Jim and Martha retired at 65, still owe 95% on their mortgage because of they refinanced their house 5 years ago and can't pay it off, and now they're going to have to go bankrupt. And CMHC insured it, so it's the government's fault.
But you know what? There will be a story like that.
Hey, well, exactly. But, that's exactly what Flaherty was trying to avoid in his actions, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, actually, it was quite prudent, quite honestly. It was a prudent decision to do some of this, to reel in a little bit of that, as you call it, the fringe behavior.
Yeah, I had no problem with it. I think it's absolutely it's good. No, and again, you and I know this, but people have short memories as a rule. Only 5 years ago, that the maximum amortization was 25 years.
Yep.
So, and here's one more thing, Russ. This is only, as I said in the beginning, can only impact CMHC, high ratio insurance. There are lenders out there who are still offering, if you put 20% down, which you have to do anyways as an investor, there's still 35-year amortizations available.
You mentioned there was a couple that had 40, wasn't there?
Well, Merrick's is still offering 40-year amortizations on the conventional mortgages for real estate investors. So, again, it's not the end of the world. Much ado about nothing, in my opinion. But having said that, here's the key. As we said, how can you profit from this as a real estate investor? Now, this is where, Russ, this is the fun part for you and I, because we know this is the stuff that's going on in the marketplace. We know this is the stuff that the average Canadian is going to get inundated with on the headlines of the newspaper. March 18th, rules change. Plus, there's going to be continued ongoing pressure to increase rates. So rising rates and rule changes, again, what do you have? Repeat of May of 2010, a get-in-while-you-can mentality has surfaced.
Yeah.
So February, again, in my office and everybody I've talked to, February was a record February. No, every mortgage broker, banker, lawyer I've talked to said, we have never seen a larger volume February than this past February we just had, because everybody was doing things in February to get in before the rule changes, even though the rule changes had virtually zero impact on them.
Now, were most of those people, were they people that were buying, or were people refinancing, or is a combination of things that you've seen from your office?
It's a bit of a combination. Of course, obviously, a lot of investors are saying, I want to get in before, I can still get the 35-year amortization. A few people were saying, I want to take up to 90% of my equity out while I still can and use it to invest in real estate, which I'm never really comfortable with anyways. But others were just getting in and buying and before interest rates go up. And the combination of all those factors led to a surge in the marketplace again.
Yep.
And here we keep waiting for the bubble to burst. And these unintended consequences of government actions are preventing this real estate bubble from bursting. In fact, it's doing the opposite. It's surging it forward that much more. So, if you're a sophisticated real estate investor, you take a step back, you see what the masses are doing, you see that there's predictable patterns, and also what you can see is that people will back off after March 18th, not for any economic fundamental reasons, but just purely because they thought, now it's too late. Now that I can only get a 30-year amortization, I guess I've missed the boat.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to reiterate something that you mentioned earlier, and I know you touched on it quickly, but I just want to point out to everybody, you know, moving from a 35 to a 30, and you said it's not going to increase the cost of your borrowing. It will impact your cash flow, but let's say your payment goes up $100 a month. That doesn't mean you're paying an extra $100 in interest. That means that at the end of the year, your tenant for real estate investors, you have an extra $100 a month of mortgage reduction, which is equity in our books, is it not?
Exactly.
Yeah. So.
No, exactly.
Good.
Yeah,
so just knowing your numbers doesn't be...
It is, and understanding the difference between and not getting caught up in the hype. You know, I remember I wrote, I think on one of my mortgage minutes, I was saying that, you know, on an average $300,000 mortgage, the difference between 35-year M and 30-year M is $100 a month. It's not really, if that's the difference between your making or breaking your deal, maybe you should reevaluate it. But the key was, it's not that now that's $100 a month more expensive, that's $100 a month more going towards your principal.
Right.
You know, you're just paying off the principal faster. So, but I had, you wouldn't believe the amount of emails I got in response. Well, $100 is $100, and I can't really afford that. You know, and it was, I was quite surprised at the backlash I got from a few people, you know, suggesting that it was irresponsible for me to suggest that that's not a big deal.
Well, that's $100 on 300,000. Most real estate investors I know, and I'm speaking for myself, I ain't taking $300,000 mortgages on properties. I think the highest mortgage I have on a place is maybe $160,000, and most of mine are in the, you know, $150 or less. So,
yeah,
you know, it's like $50 difference. And if my margins are that skinny, yeah, it's probably a question if I want to keep the property or if I want to buy it in the first place.
Yeah, and again, I'll go back to my personal preference. I mean, you look at the people who bought 5 years ago and for the 20 years previous to that where you only had a 25-year amortization as an option, they're going, you know, what's the big deal? But the other thing is, and this is my personal opinion, Russ, is I personally am encouraging my clients and people I talk to get into some debt reduction strategies because we don't know what the future holds in store. We like to think that everything's going to be trucking along and getting back to a normalization, whatever that is. But, you know, we like to see a normalized market, et cetera, et cetera. But in the event that there is any downturn in the future that or curveballs that hit us, I think we're better off with a little bit less debt than having too much. And so I certainly have no problem with an extra $100 a month on each property going towards paying down my debt and increasing my equity. Put me in a stronger position for the future.
Definitely less debt that doesn't create income is the first place I always target. If I have a debt on something that creates me income, that's one of the last ones I want to start targeting. I get rid of all my debt that has no income attached to it, get rid of that, and then start chunking down the ones that's producing me income. So,
yeah, exactly.
So let's so recently, you know, Bank of Canada did not raise interest rates in March, early March, and most people were saying it was going to. The market was, you know, the bond market was already pricing it in. Was this a surprise to you? And what signals does this send to the marketplace?
Well, it was a surprise in the sense that we had Egypt and Libya go into their. That's where. If I don't want to, let's put it this way: if I go back 2 months ago, I was strongly predicting and anticipating a quarter point increase in rates, as was everybody else. And the Bank of Canada was clearly had an agenda where they were looking for an opportunity to increase rates by a quarter point in the March announcement, followed by another quarter point in April. But as we've seen since September 2001, international events will change the way the markets go, and all of a sudden, boom, you have a political unrest in Egypt and in Libya. The oil markets are in a disarray, and suddenly Canada once again finds we're not immune to global economic pressures. And, you know, you have a surging Canadian dollar, surging oil prices, and the Bank of Canada says, not a good time for us to raise rates. So the day they raised it, the day before, everybody was kind of going, yeah, no, they're not going to raise it. So everybody could have a 100% predictions the day before the actual announcement. But it just goes to show you that predicting rates is a very tenuous job right now because there's just so much that can happen in the international market. So I think to really analyze interest rates, we have to look at a bigger picture thing of, and I kind of break it down into three areas that I look at. Number one, I look and see what the Americans are doing, and what's the prospect for Ben Bernanke and the Feds to start increasing rates down there, because there's only so much that Mark Carney and the Bank of Canada can do to separate themselves. They can only have so much difference in their rates, right?
Yep.
So if you look at that, and if the Feds are at a point where they cannot do anything and will not change rates, then it's unlikely Mark Carney will raise rates by more than a quarter point.
Okay.
Until the Feds start doing something. The other thing, of course, the major factor that Bank of Canada is looking at, or they say they are, is inflation. When inflation goes over 2%, then that's where there's more pressure on the Bank of Canada to start to increase interest rates. And they are flirting with that number right now. And if it wasn't for the United States, if it wasn't for global economic pressures, I would suggest that the Bank of Canada would be definitely raising rates if we were only looking at Canadian domestic product and the Canadian domestic economy.
Okay.
However, as I said, our domestic economy is not immune to global economy. So as we see continued unrest in Europe and the Middle East, that will put downward pressure on our economy and limit Mark Carney's ability to raise rates. The last factor that I look at is the Canadian dollar itself. When the Bank of Canada raises rates, they inadvertently put upward pressure on the Canadian dollar and attract more investment into the Canadian dollar. And right now, with our Canadian dollar flirting at par or above par, depending on what day you're listening to this, any time the Canadian dollar is above par, it's going to put a downward pressure on the interest rates and discourage the Bank of Canada from raising them. So those are three kind of factors: the American economy, the global economy, and the Canadian dollar. And so I guess four things, and of course our inflation. Those are the areas that I look at when predicting whether the Bank of Canada will raise rates or not. And here's my bottom line: the consensus is that we need to raise rates by as much as 1%, which would take prime from 3% up to 4%. There's also a lot of consensus that we would probably see that go up by another further 1% from 2012 to 2013. So we could be looking at a 2% increase in prime over the next couple of years. But when you take a look at those other factors, U.S. economy, global economy, and the Canadian dollar, it's going to be very interesting to see whether the Bank of Canada can make a bold step in that direction.
Okay. Well, I know you've indicated a little bit, but I'm going to ask you the question at the end about your prediction for interest. I know you've given everyone a little teaser right now, but before we get there, Pete, I know I got a couple other questions here that people have emailed in, and I just want to make sure I capture them. You have a very good strategy for taking advantage when rates are increasing in an environment we're in right now. Although they're low and they're not going up any right now, but they will eventually go up. They have to. What's one of your top strategies that you have for in rising rate environments?
Well, in a rising rate environment, there's two things that happen: is people try to hold on to the lowest interest rate possible, either for cash flow or for budget purposes. And then, of course, when the rates go up, they'll deal with it. Then my recommendation is to deal with it today. You know rates are going to go up. If rates are going to go up over the next year or 2 years by, 1 to 2%, and your option is to say, well, maybe I should lock in right now, then my recommendation is to take the rate that you would be locking in and set your payments there. So, for example, let's say you've got prime minus 75 today, which would give you 2% interest rate. And pull up those pens and papers and write this down. So let's say you're floating at a 2.25, at 2.25, but you're wondering maybe you should lock in at 4%, because that's your option. Well, if you're even considering in that, then obviously your budget can afford it. So if your budget can afford it, either your personal family budget if it's principal residence, or you're still getting cash flow if it's an investment property at 4%, then increase your payment as if you're paying 4%, but keep the low prime.
Right.
And what that will do is it'll do two things. Number one, it'll adjust your budget so that when rates start to rise, you're not going to be impacted in terms of your monthly payment, because you've already adjusted it beforehand.
Okay.
So you'll avoid what I call payment shock. Like, oh my God, my rates prime just went up by 1%. Now I have to increase my mortgage payment. And so you'll avoid all that because you've already done it. But at the same time, what you will have done in the process, you will have accelerated your debt reduction, and more of your money will go towards paying the principal.
Okay.
Which, as I said before, is something I'm a big fan of.
Right. So just, I'm sometimes slow in the uptake here, but I am taking very good notes. So you're saying when we get a quote from our mortgage broker, we should get a quote for fixed money and then also a quote for the best variable.
Yes.
Take the variable, but make our payment based upon the fixed payment amount. Is that what you're
exactly
saying? Okay.
Exactly.
Now, do you recommend setting that payment up from the beginning and just have the bank automatically withdraw that, or do you recommend keeping it at the variable and then making manual payments to make the difference?
Well, I always have a little difficulty with this one, Russ. Okay, I'll give you two answers. Number one, one is for the sophisticated investor that's on top of his budget and is disciplined. Okay, that individual should take the lowest payment, because when he goes to qualify for a mortgage in the future, he's going to show a lower payment. It'll help him qualify. It'll help his debt service ratios.
Yep.
But that individual should save up the money that he's not, that extra money, set it aside and make lump sum payments arbitrarily. Like personally make manual lump sum payments on his mortgage to pay it down faster, and as if he or she had a 4% interest rate. Now, I emphasize that's an ideal scenario. The problem is, you and I both know, I'm guilty of it. You know, in our busy, busy day-to-day lives, we have all the best intentions but tend not to follow through on them. And it's like, oh yeah, I was supposed to do a lump sum payment, but they needed a new stove in that unit and I spent the money over there instead. So for everybody else, there's MasterCard. For everybody else who feels that they don't have that self-discipline, then I would recommend just to have the bank set the payments as if it were 4% interest rate.
Okay. To steal somebody's famous quote, set it and forget it, might be a
term. Exactly.
Okay, yeah. So you've actually come up with an article, which I'm going to include for everyone who's going to listen to this interview, where you've given an example of a $300,000 mortgage. And it's at a 4.05 interest rate and a prime minus 0.6. And you did a calculation to figure out what would the savings be of just that strategy that you shared right there. Would you happen to have that number handy, or if you can maybe explain a little further?
Yeah, it was really interesting. We decided to play around some numbers and just see, because sometimes we talk theory that, hey, if you set your payments higher, you pay off more principal, blah, blah, blah. But let's actually look at the real numbers. And, it even surprised me, Russ. We took a prime minus 60, and then here's the thing. Remember we said that we think that prime is going to go up by maybe 1% or 2%, but there's also a lot of factors out there in the marketplace that
yep.
would potentially prevent that. Well, we, for the purpose of our model, took a worst-case scenario and assumed that over the next five years, that the Bank of Canada prime would double from 3% to 6%.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's going to go up by 3%, 3 percentage points over the next 5 years. Then we also made the assumption for the purpose of this experiment.
So just for this assumption, for everyone listening, it essentially the Bank of Canada increases a quarter percentage point every almost 5 months.
Exactly.
Okay.
So a slow, steady, progressive rate increase every 5 months by a quarter point, so that at the end of 5 years, the Bank of Canada's prime is 6%.
Okay.
But you have, over that course of that time, you have a prime minus 0.6%. So prime minus 60 is what we, in our industry lingo, we call it prime minus 60. So you start out at 2.4%, and then eventually by the end of 5 years, you're paying 5.4%. So if I look at that, you think, well, what's the average interest rate over that 5 years? And then compare it to the opportunity to pay 4.04% today. Because if you look at that and say, well, if prime went to 6% and I had prime minus 60, I'm going to end up paying 5.4%. And when you're at 5.4%, you're going to look back and go, oh, my God, I could have locked in at 4.04%. I was stupid. I should have locked in when I had a chance. And that, and if you follow the strategy I'm talking about, you have to have the emotional strength to avoid that emotional feeling you're going to have when you're paying 5.4%. Because here's what happens. We ran this out, and we started at 2.4%, but we made our payments as if we were paying the fixed rate cost. In other words, set your payments as if you were paying 4.4%. which would have been the amount you would have had to pay if you'd locked in at that time.
Yep.
So apples and apples comparison. Because more money went off the principal up front, because your interest rate was only 2.4, but you were making payments as if it was 4.04, more money went off the principal up front, which is when there's the highest amount of interest on a mortgage. And that little acceleration worked out so that when you compared one person doing that strategy compared to the other person who took the 4.04, the average interest rate over that five-year period worked out to 3.72%.
Right.
And the person on an average $300,000 mortgage, the person who took the variable rate but set their payments higher, would have saved just under $5,000 in that scenario.
Well, tell you what, that's a significant over 5 years. That's significant, is not, because
it's
now
cash in your pocket,
cash in your house, right?
Mm.
And but it also impacts the future amortization as well, because
absolutely,
it makes more difference paying something off early rather than later.
Yeah. And then, of course, that you're that much more, you're less vulnerable to potential rate hikes 5 years from now.
Yep.
By having a lower principal balance.
Yep. Well, brilliant strategy. And as I mentioned, I will include this this analysis of what Peter and one of his associates, Freeman Yee, has done. I'll include that for everyone on this conference call as well, just on a web page, and just click through. Peter, just another thing, a topic here. Recently, you announced, you know, and maybe I'm talking about myself, but I know I'm talking to a lot of RAIN members here, that we, you know, once you get over a certain threshold of mortgages, you start bumping into roadblocks. But, you know, resilient investors that we are, we find ways to create more income from our properties, and we find ways of getting more mortgages. But you recently had a breakthrough with a lender, and they're talking about putting together something called a sophisticated investor mortgage for people with 20 or more mortgages. Can you give us a little update on where you're at with that?
Yeah, it's. I was really excited. We were talking to a lender, and you know, the irony in the marketplace today is if you have between 0 and 4 rental properties, there's a lot of the non-bank lenders, the ones that require mortgage-backed securities on the back end and all that, they cannot do a mortgage for you if you own more than 4 properties. So we've always had some limitations there. Then all the banks are like, well, you know what? Once we get beyond 4 or 5 or 6 properties, we're a little uncomfortable with your exposure, et cetera, et cetera. And yet I'm talking to the vice president of this one lender, which is an affiliation with the Canadian Western Bank. He said something that absolutely blew me away, Russ. He said, you know what? I have more confidence in an investor who owns 20 properties than I do with a guy who owns his first or second, because the guy who owns 1 or 2 is more likely to make a mistake or be less sophisticated. The guy who owns 20 obviously knows what he's doing. And I said, yeah, exactly. And it was an exciting day for me, because it's the first time I'd ever had that conversation, which to me and to you is dead obvious. But for whatever reason, it's the first time I've ever had a lender actually state that fact. So we're working with them very closely, and we came up with the concept of maybe coming up with a unique product just for that individual with 20 or more properties, the sophisticated investor. I suggested, well, why don't we call it the sophisticated investor mortgage?
Right.
And they thought that was a great idea. So the pricing is not going to be rock bottom pricing, but they're also not going to have B loan or subprime or private lender fees on it. So you're probably looking at something in the range of half a percentage point or maybe a full percentage point above what the fully discounted rate would be, which, again, for people who have no alternative and the banks are all turning it down, I don't know about you, but I'd be more than happy to pay 1% higher rather than have to give away the deal to a joint venture partner just so they can qualify on my behalf.
Yep. Yeah,
and
to give away a lot of the deal, a lot of the deal is somebody else with future upside, or pay a little. You know, obviously pending cash flow, pending of the analysis. True. So.
Yeah. Well, I had a really good example, and the case study we were using was an individual who just got to the point where he's capped out at every bank. If he went to go apply and be on the mortgage, he had the down payment, he had everything, but just banks weren't giving him money anymore, which is ridiculous because he had 30 or 40 mortgages. And so he was bringing in joint venture partners just to qualify for the mortgage. He was providing the down payment, and they both, you know, and the problem is he had to give away 50% of the whole deal just because he couldn't get the mortgage himself. So for that individual, for him to pay 1% higher interest rate but own 100% of it was a no-brainer.
Yep.
So where we're at with this, Russ, is we're looking for volunteers to be part of a pilot project. We're launching a pilot project because this lender is new to Rain, but Rain members are new to them, right?
Yep.
So I've explained to them the sophisticated real estate investor binder that you guys teach at the Acre Weekend. And if anybody who's listening is not familiar with that, please make sure you're there so you're getting that information, because that's what I promised this bank you do. And I explained to them what we teach at Rain and what I teach with our pre-position consultation process. And I said there's a three-filter system. Rain members are sophisticated because they go through the Acre program. Our clients are sophisticated because they go through a pre-position consultation process with a PK-approved broker. And then by the time the deal hits our desk, we understand their program, we submit it, we package it, and send it off. So the bank is comfortable with the filters we put in place. So what they want to do is they say, well, in theory, Peter, everything you said makes sense. We'd be more than happy to work with your clients and these RAIN members you speak of, but let's see what that looks like in reality. So we're looking for some volunteers who would like to be part of this pilot project.
Well, I know somebody near and dear to myself that would be probably knocking on your door pretty quick here, Peter, again. Perfect. So first and foremost, on behalf of investors across the country and RAIN members in particularly, wanted to thank you. You know, your persistence and your tenacity of knocking on doors every time you go to Toronto and knocking on doors and you know, carrying the flag for us. On behalf of everyone, I want to thank you for taking these steps. So thank you very much.
Well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, and make no mistake about it, it serves our purposes as well, because, you know, I love working with investors. Real estate investors are great to work with in the sense of the loyalty and just the fact, you know, from a mortgage broker's perspective, what you and Don teach RAIN members from at the Acre program makes our clients makes them a better mortgage because they're sophisticated, and we don't have to deprogram them and explain why the American rules don't work.
Yep.
And you know, again, compared to some of the other programs that are out there, the RAIN members are just such a pleasure to work with. So we want to continue to be able to find ways to work with RAIN members and help them have success, which helps us be successful. So it's a mutually beneficial effort. Let's put it that way.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay, Pete, the big one. I'm going to put you on the spot, and we're digitally recording this, so it's going to be out there forever. So, you know, and you know, the beautiful thing is your track record has been extremely strong. I follow very, very closely to any of the forecasts and predictions you do. But, you know, most Canadians like to talk about weather, hockey, and interest rates. And with the weather, we're getting into spring. Hockey, you know, Canucks are in first place. The Leafs are making a push. Let's hope they make the playoffs. And you know what? There might even be a franchise in Winnipeg. So there's a lot to talk about hockey. Okay, interest rates. If you look into your crystal ball that you have sitting on there, the great Karnak is going to give his prediction. Let's talk about fixed interest rates first. What's your thought? What is your research telling you about fixed interest rates?
Well, again, what we're going to see here is a bond market, which is like any other market. The bond yields impact long-term rates. So if you want to know if long-term rates are going up or down, just monitor the bond yields. And if you see an upward movement in the bond yields, you'll know there's going to be upward movement and pressure on the fixed rates. Right now, fixed rates are at historic lows. But again, the bond market is like any other, is like the stock market. It can fluctuate up and down based on emotion. It can fluctuate up and down based on market conditions and international pressures, economic fundamentals, and global pressure. So the one variable here that is difficult to measure is the emotional component there. And there's for example, the bond market's priced in an expectation that the Bank of Canada was going to raise rates in March. And I said to everybody, watch for the long-term rates to soften and drop off a bit right after the Bank of Canada announcement. Everybody goes, why? Well, they priced in a rate increase and increased the bond yields. Then when the rate increase didn't materialize, they readjusted, and we saw a slight drop in long-term rates last week. But again, nobody in the media reported that, did they? Mm. But if we look at this moving forward, I think there's going to be an ongoing pressure for the bonds, the bond market to have an upward movement and long-term rates to have an upward movement. We're sitting in hovering right around the 4% range. I think it would be very comfortable and very normal to see that by about the 5% range a year from now. So I think if we're sitting on this phone call 1 year from now, I'm going to suggest that, you know, people are going to be looking and questioning whether they should be locking in at 4.94, 4.89, or 5.05.
Right.
That's exactly where I think you're going to see a full 1% swing in a year.
Okay. And you know what? Advice I would give to everybody on this call, you know, the reason why we mentioned fixed interest rates, 70% of Canadians have fixed interest rates. And let's say you have a property and the only property you have maybe is a personal residence and you're in a fixed interest rate. I would seriously right now, knowing what you know and listening to this call, contact your mortgage broker or contact your bank and ask them the question if you can lock in at today's interest rate, find out if there's a penalty. And quite frankly, at this rate, a 4 or sub 4, if you can get it, I would take 5 more years of that in a heartbeat if you can get that. So, okay, most real estate investors we know are in variable rates. So what do you think is going to happen with the Bank of Canada Prime? Two questions here. Bank of Canada Prime in a year from now, and then also the discount off of Prime in a year from now. Your best guess.
Well, you know, it's almost identical to the long-term rates. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure where the Bank of Canada, let's put it this way, Mark Carney and the Bank of Canada would love to see a full 1% increase in Prime. Guaranteed. I know that for a fact. If they had it their way, we'd have a slow, steady progress up to 1%. So Bank of Canada Prime should be at 4% a year from now. Okay, and then they would like to see another 1% increase in 2012 to 2013. Having said that, this is where the prediction gets hard. I think the Canadian, the issues I mentioned before, global economic pressures, the state of the American economy, and the Canadian dollar are all going to be factors that put downward pressure on the Bank of Canada or Canadian interest rates. Even though that our domestic economy is strong enough to support 2% inflation, the export factors, every time the Canadian dollar goes above par with the United States, that's going to be putting downward pressure on our economy, is going to take that 2% inflation and have a downward pressure on it. than every time that Ireland, Greece, and other areas in Europe find that they're in continued ongoing global economic turmoil. That's going to impact our economy in terms of our international exports, which will put a downward pressure on our interest rates. And again, what happens in the Middle East with the turmoil and what happens with oil prices is going to play itself out over the next few months. And here's the other thing we don't know is 6 months from now, what's the new Libya? What's the new global blow up, you know? And it's almost predictable that something's going to have some global chaos that's going to put hamper our economic recovery. So all this comes back to Canadian economic recovery. If our Canadian economy is humming along and in full-blown, full-out recovery mode, then Mark Carney and the Bank of Canada will easily move those rates up by a full 1% and onwards to 2% increase. But personally, Russ, I don't see it happening. I think there's going to be too many factors in our global economy, and the Americans, as you and I both know, are not coming out of there. They don't even know where rock bottom is, let alone what the recovery schedule is. And until the Americans can identify the bottom of the market, they can't even begin to have any semblance of recovery. And until that happens, again, Mark Carney and the Bank of Canada are going to be hard-pressed to increase rates by a full percentage point.
Okay, so you're if I'm just for keeping track of my scorecard here, your best forecast is 1% higher to 4%, but you would not be surprised if it doesn't go up that high this year.
Yeah, if you want to put me on the market and say, well, what's my prediction? I'm going to go out and say a 0.75% increase over the next year.
Okay,
they're going to want to do a 1%, but I think the global economic factors will prevent them from sending a full 1% increase. So my prediction is a year from now, we'll be looking at 3.75 as your prime rate.
Yeah, and you know, and I commend you for being brave. You know, a lot of people, as you mentioned, a lot of people make the forecast the day before the announcement, and then they say, see, I was right.
Well, we'll see. We'll see a year from now. I did.
A year from now, everyone will be phoning, Pete, you made a mistake. Yeah, let's hope it's on the. No, but
it's only 3.69.
That is very brave to make that. So, everyone, I hope you wrote those numbers down. And earlier, you mentioned about a couple times. We talked about this ACRE program, which stands for the Authentic Canadian Real Estate System, which is the foundational. Method of investing in real estate, which is foundational from Don Campbell's book, Real Estate Investing in Canada. And you're a big part of the ACRE programs. There's two that are upcoming. There's one coming in Calgary, which is March 19th and 20th. And then there's one coming in Toronto, which is April 16th and 17th. Now, you're a big part of this because you present the banking section, which no one better in the country to present this. But you also have a team of individuals there that you offer free mortgage and portfolio consultations for that. Can you explain a little bit about that for us?
Well, Russ, we started doing this and it created a really good win-win situation. I found that, first of all, two things. The more educated my client becomes, the better our life is. It's easier for us. I mean, I'm being very blunt and brutal about what's in it for me. You know, I think that's important for the listener to know. The benefit to me is that the more educated my client is, the easier it is for us to help construct a portfolio that's going to be successful for them. And, you know, if you as a real estate investor are successful in accomplishing your goals, the only way I make money as a mortgage broker is I get paid once a mortgage funds. So if I can figure out a way to help you accomplish your goal, and that means you need to finance, get mortgages, then that's how I make my money. So that's what's in it for me. But in the process of working with clients over the past 10 years and working with literally thousands and thousands of real estate investors, what I discovered is the average consumer who comes in and doesn't have the knowledge or experience that RAIN teaches is paralyzed from two things, fear and hype in the media and a lack of information or misinformation from family, friends, and peers. And two things happen at the ACRE weekend. One, you and Don do an absolutely fantastic job of teaching these individuals on how to find, you know, what, when, where, and how to find and buy real estate. But, you know, the interesting thing that we started doing these consultations where we pull people out from the ACRE event, sit down for half an hour at a time, and go through a three-step process. What I would do is I'd say, tell me where you are today, where you see yourself in the future, and what's your plan to get there. Three simple things. Where are you at? Where are you going? How do you plan to get there? And you know what I found, Russ? 90, if not 99% of the time, people had no clue. They said, well, I know where I am today, but I have no clue where I'm going because I don't know what's possible. I love what Don and Russ are teaching in there, but I don't know if that's relevant to me. I don't know if I'm capable of doing this. I don't know if I can do it. And that really impacted me, because when we sat down in our consultation process, I said, well, no, actually, look, do you know you could do this? Do you know you could do this? Do you know you could do this? And I was blown away by the amount of people said, wow, I had no idea that was possible. And then we draft out a quick little game plan. They go back in the room, and now they were listening intently, because now they knew that not only was this exciting that they heard from the stage, but they knew in their heart that they could actually do it. So the consultation process, in my opinion, became a critical component of the success of the weekend, because it gave people a roadmap from the finance side. And hey, I'm biased. I'll be the first one to tell you I'm totally biased, Russ. But as far as I'm concerned, if you can't get money to buy real estate, or if you don't think you can finance your real estate, then you're not going to be excited about going out and building a portfolio.
Well, and I know from a fact that you are very honest with the client too. If the situation is not there, it's like, okay, I'm sorry, I don't think you can qualify. Your only option might be to learn how to use joint ventures or learn how to use other things. But from what you presented, you're going to have a difficult time getting financing. And it's another set of eyes from an expert. Can anyone who's attending these ACRE events get these free consultations? Is there any obligation?
We're there.
Is there any obligation on their part?
Well, no, there's no obligation. Obviously, hey, we're doing it as a free service. We hope, we'd love to earn. We'd love to show you the value of working with us and earn your business. That's how we make our money. But yeah, there's no obligation there. But hopefully, through the process, we've shown you that there's a value add component to what we do with our consulting. Not just anybody can go out and get you the best interest rate, but you know what? Things like teaching you about cap space, why it's important to strategically structure the order in which you get your mortgage, the order in which you choose lenders to preserve cap space to maximize your mortgage potential, not just for your first deal, but for your 20th deal. Those are things that we teach that, you know, the average broker or banker never thinks about, because they don't typically work with investors. This is all we do. We work with investors almost exclusively, so we understand the unique nuances of how to structure your portfolio and the importance of choosing this bank first, then this bank, and you know, different things that we don't have time to go into on this phone call. But there's no obligation. It's free, but I would strongly recommend it and encourage everybody to do it, just so that you know where you're at, where you're going, and how you're going to get there, how to put together a game plan. And here's the other thing, Russ. Obviously, with, you know, 300, 400, 500, 700 people in the room, however many are there, you know, our team's not going to be able to sit down and meet with everybody. But you know what? You can fill out a form, and we could do it as a follow-up after the weekend. We could do it by phone or in person and have a follow-up consultation with clients. Anybody who would like to have that, that's a free consultation offer that we have on-site and afterwards as well.
Yep, and I can 100% agree and be a personal testimonial to the value of this. I yearly, if not twice a year, go and get a consultation from yourself, just to get another set of eyes on where we're going. Peter, we've covered a lot of information, and you mentioned earlier about your mortgage minute. You know, I subscribe to that, and I highly recommend everybody subscribe to it as well. Where's the best place for people to get some more information about you, and maybe contact you if they like, or also subscribe to your, you got a great video feed that you do as well that I highly recommend, and I watch it every time it comes out. What's the best place to get hold of you?
You know, the best place is my website. I've got the Mortgage Minute is now updated. I just got all the latest Mortgage Minutes are updated on there. My articles are on there. And if you go to peterkinch.com, you spell my name right, you'll get there, K-I-N-C-H, www.peterkinch.com. I've got articles on my download section, information about my book, which is the Canadian Real Estate Action Plan, which helps investors put together literally a business plan. That's my 6-hour workshop put into a book format. That's on there. There are free downloads, and of course all the Mortgage Minutes that I record are on there. And if you subscribe to the newsletter or send me an email, I'll be happy to put you on the distribution list. Whenever I do record a Mortgage Minute, which I try to put out once a week as a video blog, those are sent out to our database as part of our newsletter. So it's very easy to get on the list. And I'll try to keep – what I do, by the way, on the Mortgage Minute is I take today's headlines, read them, interpret them, and try to let you know what this means to you as a real estate investor or a mortgage holder in Canada.
Perfect. Strongly encourage everybody to tap into those. So, just looking through my 4 pages of notes here, I think we covered an awful lot of ground here. And I'll tell you what, I always take a tremendous amount of information away from every time you present. Just one more reminder here. Peter is going to be part of the team that's going to be presenting at the upcoming ACRE program, which is Canada's number one most successful and most trusted investing real estate system in Canada. It's been 19-plus years in the making. It's been works in up markets, down markets, flat markets. It works across the country. It is Canadians, taught by Canadians, with what works in the marketplace. As mentioned, Peter and his team will be there on site giving free consultations. If you bring your information in advance, you can get a consultation from one of the best in the business. Reminder, it's March 19th and 20th. It's in Calgary. And the next one for the Eastern Canada is April 16th and 17th in Toronto, coming up very, very shortly. If you want to get all the details, you can click on the webpage you're listening to this interview, or you can call our office at 1-888-824-7346. That's 888-824-7346, and you can get more information. Peter, do you have any final comments you'd like to leave off before we sign off on this call?
Well, two things. Number one, I want to say to everybody that as we move forward to 2011, you're going to see a lot more hype and fear-mongering from the media and the headlines. Your job is to interpret them and take some of the things that we mentioned here today, put them and how to interpret them, and don't be one of those that feed into the hype. Become a sophisticated investor so that you learn how to differentiate fear and hype from the truth, and make your decisions based on truth and economic fundamentals. And the best way to learn about how to do that is undoubtedly the ACRE event. And I just would encourage everybody to, and again, I'm presenting there, but really I'm not saying it for that reason. I mean, honestly, people who go to the ACRE event are just that much more sophisticated, and they're so much easier to deal with as a client. But more importantly for you as a listener on this call, it becomes one of those things that differentiates you from the average person who watched some late night TV show and you want to go buy real estate, because most people I meet are caught up in a fear of analysis paralysis, or especially if you're working with a spouse who's like, I don't know if this is something I should do. I want to get into real estate, but I know somebody who lost money. What Don and Russ and the RAIN team teach are the fundamentals. They're not there. They're not selling you real estate. There's no phony baloney, keep it clean, stuff at the back of the room to sell. It's just pure economic fundamentals. You go there, you're going to come out with your head spinning and full chocker block full of solid economic fundamentals and information that will lead you to be more confident as a real estate investor. So I would strongly encourage anybody who's serious about buying real estate for investment purposes to be there.
Excellent, and thank you very much for those kind words, because I know you firmly believe in it. And last but not least, I wanted to thank each and every one of you for listening to this special Real Estate Investing in Canada interview with Mr. Peter Kinch. Tell you what, we covered many different topics. Make sure you go through this call maybe even a couple times, because we did cover that many things, and they are that important that it does directly impact your bottom line. If you'd like to register for one of our programs, you can call our office, like I mentioned, 1-888-824-7346, and we're more than happy to help you out. Once again, this is Russell Westcott, Vice President of RAIN, signing off and looking forward to seeing each and every one of you at an upcoming ACRE program. Bye for now.